I decided to talk today about my favorite thing in the world, which is the Song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi. It's a 1,200-year-old Chinese poem by our Zen ancestor, Dongshan. And in particular, I wanted to talk about a particular phrase. It's kind of tucked away without a lot of fanfare. It says, "Its use removes all pains." Its use removes all pains. So to get some context for this phrase, let's chant really just the beginning of the poem. This is maybe the first third of the poem, something like that. So is our Kokyo here to, would you please announce the
Yes. Song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi.
The teaching of justice has been intimately communicated by the adults and ancestors. Now that you have it so deep it will, the emptiness is overbold, which never will hide any of the evidence of the light. They can ask never liver, they're not the same. When you mix them, you know where they are. Any desire is the worst, yet it creates sounds to the inquisitive impulse. Move when you are trapped, miss that you fall to doubt in the vacillation. Turning away and touching our world wrong, for it is like a massive fire. Just to depict it in literary form is painted with defilement. It is right just at midnight in dust or here at trauma. It asks of the God for beings. It usually removes all pains. Although it is not fabricated, it is not without speech. It is like facing a digital mirror, form and image evolve each other. You are not it, in truth it is you. Like a babe in the world in five aspects complete, it does not go or mountain nor rise nor stand. Father, well, anything said or not. Ultimately, it does not apprehend anything because its speech is not yet correct. It is like the six lines of the illumination hexagram, relative and ultimate interact. Pile up, they may agree, the complete transformation they find. It is like the taste of the five flavored herb, light and then a thunderbolt.
Okay, so throughout this passage, you'll read, it is bright just at midnight, it acts as a guide for beings, it removes all pains. It is like facing a jewel mirror. The it refers to thusness. So this is a poem about thusness. Okay. It's really, that's the whole subject of the poem. So it's really thusness that removes all pains. Okay. So what does the word thusness, sometimes it's suchness. What does it refer to? According to Thomas Cleary, one of our great translators in the Zen tradition, thusness is everything, but in particular, it is the inconceivable real nature of things. Things as they really, really are, without concepts attached to it. Okay. So, for example, this cup, can everybody see this cup? Okay, so if I hold up this cup, you might immediately have ideas about it. Okay, so what's that trashy thing doing in a Zen center? Or what else might you think about it? If you it's cute.
Childhood.
Okay.
See my childhood.
Okay. So memories might attach to it. Mm-hmm. So judgments about it. Oh, it's so wasteful to use paper cups. Judgments might be attached to it. Memories might be attached to it. We all We all know about the Dixie Cup, right? maybe you have some idea of its purpose. When I came in with it today, someone said, oh, do you want to drink water out of that? Or you might use it for your paper clips. Or someone suggested that it could be a little hat. Okay, so there's all kinds of thoughts swirling around this paper cup, okay, which really obscure its real nature, really obscure its thusness. Okay, so, you know, can you look at this cup without sticking your ideas to it? Can you do it? Dad says no.
Not for the idea of form.
Right. So that's one example. Basically, because it's inconceivable, you can't think about it. You can't, right? So there is a story that is told often here at the Zen Center. And it is called The Legend of Zach and the Golden Soup. How many of you heard The Legend of Zach? See, look at everybody. The Legend of Zach and the Golden Soup. But this is story really, I think, presents thusness really beautifully. And in fact, Zach's going to be teaching a class about thusness. Suchness is another word for it. So he has direct experience from thusness. So he was at a retreat. It was probably his first retreat. Mm-hmm. One of the first retreats. And meals are served in bowls. We have three bowls. And the server came and poured this beautiful golden liquid into one of his bowls. And he was just amazed and so curious and interested in what is this that I'm being given here at the Zen Center. It's wonderful. It's lovely. And then he started drinking it and realized it was orange juice. So, but that initial experience, you know, before it was orange juice, which can kind of be dismissive of thusness once you identify it, but not necessarily. You know, Zach can tell you himself, but maybe even knowing that it was Zachness, orange juice, he could still experience the thusness of it, okay, without concepts attached to it. You know, the wonderful taste of orange juice. Can you taste it right now? The wonderful, beautiful taste of orange juice. And that's, I think that's a good example also of thusness. So I just as an aside, you know, our judgments are also, our thoughts and our judgments are also thusness. Okay, so we can observe the thusness of our judgments and our thoughts. So it includes everything. Thusness includes everything. Okay, so the line says in our usual translation, the one that we translate as part of our liturgy, says its use removes all pains. But another way of translating it is its use as on this, the second page. Its use. It's at number two. It's at number two, is that its use removes all suffering. Okay, so I would like to distinguish between pain and suffering. Maybe you've heard this being distinguished before, that we can't get rid of pain. We can't. It's inherent in our existence. We can't remove pain. Pain is a necessary part of our existence. So that if you break your arm, go to the doctor because it hurts, right? Or because you love someone, when they die, it hurts. Okay, so pain is a necessary and important part of our existence. But we might look at suffering and say that suffering we can remove. Buddhism promises that suffering can be removed. Okay. So what is suffering? I suppose you could think of many different ways of defining suffering, but let's think of it as a sort of tightening or a tensing around the pain. So you've got a pain, and then we tighten around it. We tense because we don't like it, so the tension comes into it. So there's a kind of fist-like feeling to suffering. Sometimes we hold on to our pain really hard. We don't want it to go away. or there's a lot of mental agitation around it that is not really a necessary part of the pain. Maybe that mental agitation is caused by fear, for example. Or we try to get out of it and not feel it. Or it becomes a part of our identity. How can I be myself without my pain? It's a kind of tightening around it, right? I have been known to make up a story about it and tell it over and over and over again. So it's like a hammer in my brain telling myself this story over and over. So that's a kind of tightening. That's the kind of suffering that we can reduce, that we can remove according to the promise that Buddhism makes to us. Okay, so I want to talk about how thusness can remove suffering, not pain. Okay. So the part of the poem that we just chanted uses a really dizzying array of metaphors that can lead us into the experience of thusness. We can use them to help remove suffering. Okay. So it's interesting that we can use thusness according to the poem. Its use removes all suffering. So I think that's kind of interesting. We can use it. So the metaphors, as those who are in the poetry class are well familiar with, thusness is like a massive fire. It's like a mirror. It's like a baby. It's like the illumination hexagram of the I Ching. It's like a five-flavored herb. It's like a diamond thunderbolt. So thusness is a massive fire and a baby. It's an herb and a diamond thunderbolt. Okay, so it's kind of crazy. So with all of these metaphors, you can't get stuck on one fixed view of thusness, right? Because it's all of these things. How is thusness like a five-flavored herb? You know, if thusness is like a five-flavored herb, then it's not just one thing, right? It's not just bitter, or it's not just sweet. It's bitter, it's sweet, it's pungent, it's sour, and it's salty. Okay, so it's multidimensional. Thusness has all these different dimensions to it. Okay. Or if the idea of flavors doesn't really work for you, you could think of the five senses, how in every moment you're seeing, you're hearing, you're touching, you're smelling, and you're tasting. Or it could be emotional complexity. You can be aware of emotional complexity also, or the multidimensionality of emotions, of your emotions. So you want to just spend a moment. What is this moment like if looked at as multidimensional? So some of you are smiling. I think because when we have an experience of thusness, it kind of opens us up out of this fist. So having to be aware of all the different dimensions all at once. When you taste the five flavored herb, the flavors are there for you all at once. 2, 3, 4, 5. It opens up the fist of suffering, I think. So when you're in pain, seeing the multidimensional quality of the situation can help you open up. Okay, so that the pain is not the only thing. Maybe you have a pain in your hip right now, but also you can hear the traffic go by. And there's the sweetness of sitting next to that particular person. Or, you know what I mean? So, so in sort of everyday sort of pain, it's seeing the multidimensionality of the whole situation can help. Sometimes, though, we are overwhelmed with pain. We are just overwhelmed with it, and we can't see outside of it at all. Okay, so then maybe we can find the multidimensionality of the pain itself. And maybe that would help to give it some kind of spaciousness instead of that locked, fist-like feeling, having that being locked into your suffering. Maybe it also can have multi-dimensions. Okay, so how is thusness like a diamond thunderbolt? Okay. I see that my assistant was getting ready over there. So the diamond is used in Zen literature because of the way it can cut through delusion. Okay, it cuts through. And it's also a thunderbolt is sudden and powerful. Okay, it's electrical power that's very sudden, and it's also loud. So I want to share with you a little bit of one of the poems that was written in the poetry class, because it seems like a really good example of the diamond thunderbolts. Okay, so this poem was written by Patrick back there. Want to raise your hand to identify yourself? Patrick Waldo. It's a poem called The Dharma Gate of Insomnia. Speaking of pain, The Dharma Gate of Insomnia. So the poem goes through all of his difficulties with a sort of horrific insomnia that just will not go away. And it lists all the things that he tries to get rid of the insomnia. Okay. And it just so happens that he goes to the Burning Man Festival. Is everyone familiar with the Burning Man? Does anyone not know what Burning Man is? You have a visual for Burning Man. So he's at Burning Man, and here's where I'm going to start quoting. I seek the Dharma of electric bliss. Go to the desert and the dust will set you free. Spectacle upon spectacle arise. The four elements and the five skandhas ecstatically dance and roll. Still, I am alone at midnight, dissatisfied with my journey and insights. I leave my friends on foot toward the remote expanse. As the cacophony recedes into landscape, I feel my thoughts with every footstep. There, at the liminal edge between civilization and wilderness, a trickster draws near to whisper a mystery. I fall to my knees, laughter roaring forth, and look to the stars in the luminous dark sky. With everything to accept and nothing to attain, may you find calm and refuge in the night. Mm-hmm. Isn't that beautiful? Mm-hmm. There were many extraordinary, beautiful poems written this year. So this was not the only one, but I think that it's a really good example of an experience of thusness as a sudden diamond thunderbolt, right? He's there, he's dissatisfied, it's not working out the way he wanted it to, but there suddenly he hears something, I don't quite know what, but something whispering in his ear, and he falls to his knees. It's a sudden example of the diamond thunderbolt. And this laugh is also, you know, this sudden laugh, it's like a diamond thunderbolt. I'm going to have a little more to say about this a little bit later. But one interesting thing about this poem is that it maybe sets up an expectation that, now you can sleep after this diamond. But no, it doesn't say that. It doesn't say, now I can sleep, because the pain is still there, but the suffering around it has been relieved, at least temporarily, the suffering around it. And so he can accept it with everything to accept and nothing to attain, is his line. Okay, so he has not attained a restful night of sleep, but he has come to accept his insomnia as part of everything. Okay, so the experience of the diamond thunderbolt can come in ordinary life. It can be just an ordinary experience where suddenly you feel yourself, I'm centered. Everything around me is coming alive, and it's so beautiful. And I'm sure everybody has that experience, maybe multiple times a day, I don't know, where suddenly, instead of, poor me, or that hurts, instead of suddenly you're opened up and you can see the really intense beauty of the world around you. Okay. And in my practice with this, I have found occasionally, not all the time, that I can try calling for it. I can say, come, Diamond Thunderbolt. Come, Diamond Thunderbolt. So, and then I can experience a shift. Not every, it doesn't work every time, but but I can call upon it. Okay, the six lines of the illumination hexagram refers to an I Ching hexagram. This is what it looks like. Can everybody see? I have more copies if you can't see it. Mm-hmm. Pass it around. But the I Ching is a very ancient form of divination. Show the... Oh. I can't see it if I do that. There, you can see it. Okay, good. ancient form of divination that you can consult when you can't figure something out on your own and you just need the help of the I Ching spirit, which is very alive, strangely alive, I'll tell you. So the common way of doing it today is throwing three coins, and depending on what comes up, heads or tails, you build this hexagram. So this, if you get you build this hexagram. I don't want to go into too much into it, based on the throwing of the coins. Okay. And you get a straight line or a broken line. Okay. And the straight line represents the relative plane, or things are big and tall, short and and little, and so on, where we normally live. This we normally live in the relative plane. The broken line represents the ultimate, okay, the inconceivable, the great mystery. Okay, so every I Ching hexagram is a combination of the relative and the ultimate. Okay. And this one is called, in my book, the book that I often consult, it's called Radiance. It's called Radiance. So when the relative and the ultimate interact, as it says in the poem, what do we get? We get a kind of radiance. Okay. So, without going into too much detail about the I Ching, it's just a picture. It's a picture of the relationship, the interaction of the ultimate and the relative. And the idea is that it can help you with your suffering. This relationship between the ultimate and the relative, a realization of it can help you with your suffering. So I think that Patrick's poem is also an example. The story in this poem is also an example of the relative and the ultimate coming together. Okay, so the luminosity of the sky is for us an image of the ultimate. Okay, so he is able to open up to the luminosity of this of the sky, and that's a kind of experience of the ultimate. Would you agree when we look at the stars and as we have that feeling? Okay, so I think that this realization, which we can kind of practice, of the way the ultimate is infused in the relative and the way the relative is infused in the ultimate, can really help us open up out of the tightness of our suffering. You see how that might work? And, you know, according to Patrick's poem, you can find this relationship even in the most painful situation. You still can't sleep, but there's the luminosity of the sky. Okay. All right. So the baby. Thusness is like a baby. Okay. So there's a lot that could be said about this and about the mirror, but I don't want to spend too much time with each one. But a baby, if thusness is like a baby, it can arouse your tenderness and your care. Okay, so our pains, which are part of thusness, because thusness includes everything, can receive our tenderness and our caring. And I think that that can be really helpful. You know, let's say you're really beset, as I often am, by a obsessive thought, an obsessive painful thought. What if I approach it with some tenderness and care instead of, oh wait, I can't stand you. You know, if I approach it with some tenderness and care, that might help with the suffering. Okay. And the mirror is such an important image in Zen practice. Mirror awareness is what we're all about. So the thing about a mirror is that it accepts everything equally. It doesn't favor one thing or another. So if I hold up a mirror, it doesn't say that Bruce is a better person than Audrey. And it doesn't reject Tal. Tal is absolutely included. Everything is included in mirror awareness. So what if you could see your pain with your mirror awareness without rejecting it? Without rejecting. What if you could look equally on pleasure and pain? Seeing them not in a sort of blank way, but seeing them both thoroughly in every detail. In a mirror, every detail is shown. So you can experience your pleasure and your pain in the exquisite detail. And with an inclusivity, that's a kind of love, right? Inclusivity is another word for love, perhaps. Okay, so maybe you can see how activating your mirror awareness would help you with your this with the fist of suffering, that mirror awareness. Okay. Another thing about a mirror that I think is interesting is that, you know, we're totally into freezing the moment with photographs, right? Mm-hmm. we're totally into that. We want the image to be stuck. but a mirror doesn't do that. A mirror records Robbie fanning herself and everyone moving their head. You know, it includes change. It includes movement and change and a complete acceptance of change. And perhaps that complete acceptance of change can help keep our pain from turning into suffering. Okay, so the last one is the massive fire. It's not the last one in the poem itself. It's the first one that comes. It's the thusness is like a massive fire. So fire is one of those symbols with many different meanings, right? So I was talking about this with Maite, and she thought that the massive fire was illumination. I don't know if you remember saying that, but it's something I might have said. And she said that the fire, the massive fire, is the massive illumination of thusness. But it also could be seen as the great destroyer, that every moment is being destroyed, right? Nothing stays. Every moment is being destroyed. It could be an image for the pains of existence also. So Galen is fond of reminding us that our Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara is there amidst an arc of flames. Okay. And so that would be Avalokiteshvara, who removes suffering, right there in the middle of suffering. Okay. So we're often taught by our teachers, by Tenshin Roshi, by Galen Roshi, that our Zen practice is to sit upright in the midst of thusness, pains, and all. And that's the Bodhisattva way, okay, is to sit upright, like Avalokiteshvara right there, sit upright in the midst of the suffering of ourselves and the sufferings of the world, okay? So in the poem says that we should not touch it. Another translation for the word that is translated in our version as touch is to grasp. We can't grasp the fire. We can't grasp thusness. Or we shouldn't try to do it. We shouldn't also turn away from it as if we could. We can't really grasp thusness. We can't grasp the fire, even if we wanted to. It's ungraspable. Even if we wanted to turn away from thusness and our pain and the pain inherent in it, we couldn't do it because it's always there. It's always there. We can't turn away from it. But in the midst of it, we can sit upright. And then it's like the blossoming of the Utpala flower. This is according to Dogen, our Japanese ancestor, Dogen. The Utpala is a blue lotus. And Dogen says it only blooms in the midst of a blazing fire. It only blooms in the midst of a blazing fire. So this, in the middle of the fire, is where we are continuously opening. You know, you take the tight fist of suffering, and it blossoms into this joy, this opening to inconceivable reality, to thusness. From moment to moment, in the midst of the fire, we can open up and blossom. Okay, so there is a certain fear of letting go of suffering, especially if suffering is everything you've never known. Not suffering. There's a certain fear to it. If it's all you know, it's hard to let go of it. But the Buddha way promises that we can let go of suffering, that we can reduce and remove suffering. And I think we can have faith. I think we can have faith in that. So later in the poem, as many of you know, the poet Dongshan puts it this way, that the stiff, tightly suffering wooden man begins to sing. And the stuck, stony woman get up dancing. If you want a poem about this, ask Daniel for his poem. He wrote an amazing poem about this process of beginning to sing and beginning to dance. So Dogen, in his classical all-inclusive study, says that this all-inclusive study means to study by doing cartwheels. Study by doing cartwheels. Okay. As it says again and again in the Avatamsaka Sutra, those of you who have delved in the Avatamsaka, that we can open to immense floods of joy.